Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. It's time for TWiT's annual audience survey, and we want to hear from you. Please visit twit.tv/survey and let us know what you think. It only takes a few minutes, and your anonymous feedback will help us make TWiT even better. We thank you so much for your continued support. twit.tv/survey. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Radio Networks on March 15th, 2015. This is episode 1170. Enjoy! The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by RingCentral, the business phone system that's in the cloud. RingCentral now integrates with Google for Work. Try RingCentral with a 30-day risk-free trial. Visit ringcentral.com or call 800-543-9980 and use the promo code TWIT. And by ZipRecruiter. Are you hiring? With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post to 50-plus job sites, including social networks, all with a single click. Screen, rate, and hire the right candidates fast. Try ZipRecruiter with a free 4-day trial now at ZipRecruiter.com/tech guy. That's ZipRecruiter.com/tech guy. And by Prosper. Prosper is a peer-to-peer lending marketplace that connects people who are looking to borrow money with those who have money to lend. Visit prosper.com/twit and receive a $50 Visa card when you get a loan. Well, hey, 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 how are you today? It's time once again for that geek with his own radio show, Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Hey, hey, how you? Hey, good to see you. Thank you. Thank you for coming back. 8888 Ask Leo. That is my phone number if you want to call with a question, a suggestion, need a little help. Little hand holding. I got it for you. I'm here for you. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada, outside that area. You can use Skype and call me. That'll work too. 8888-ASK. Leo, the website, I should say this more often than I don't, and I just want to encourage you to use it, is techguylabs.com. It's free. No sign up, no nothing. Just like the old days of the internet where you just click and go. TechGuyLabs.com. Are you going to buy an Apple Watch? It's really interesting to me to see the vicious negativity about the watch. And I'm trying to figure out what it is. I think it's because some of them are so expensive. Well, it starts at $349. But there's some real... It's interesting how angry the watch makes people. I would never buy that. What a waste of money. How stupid is that? Maybe. I think the jury's still out. We won't really know how well it does. And of course, Apple, you know, I think it's part of the anger too. It comes from Apple, right? Had anybody else did it, they would have, people would have ignored it. It was like, yeah, who cares? They come out with it. But if Apple does it, it's like a big deal. But Apple's never been a company to produce inexpensive products. That's not in there. Thinking. And the watch no one needs, right? I mean, that's one of the observations. $17,000 is the top price. People say, oh, 17. But, you know, nobody needs a necklace or a tiara. People still buy them for a lot more than that. So, it could be jewelry. Could be, I don't know. Could be... I think it's an interesting device. See, what we're seeing here, it's a continuation of a trend we've been seeing for some time. Computing is shrinking, isn't it? We'll have to make it 40 years ago now, before the microcomputer, we had mainframes. They were as big as a room. In fact, they had to often have their own glass-sealed room. Remember on Mad Men, did you ever see that when they get the mainframe? They have to build a special room with a raised floor, and no one can go in there, and it's air-conditioned, and... You know, you had a cathedral with a priesthood that would tend to the thing. Then we had mini computers, which were, wow, only the size of a small refrigerator. Not bad. Then microcomputers in the late 70s. And then, you know, tablets. Well, laptops, I guess, would be next. And then tablets and smartphones. And so this has been a continuing thing, no surprise, the next kind of computer you'd have on be on your wrist or something small. You can put in your smartphones in your pocket. So what's smaller than a smartphone? A wristwatch or a pendant. Wristwatch makes sense because you can people are used to looking at their wrists, so you could put a display on it. Not a very big one. But, you know, the interesting thing about the watch, and it's not just the Apple Watch. I've been wearing Android Wear watches for a long time now. The Pebble before that. You can do much of what you would do on a larger screen on the small screen. You're not going to write a Word, you know, your Microsoft Word document on it. You're not going to do a spreadsheet on it. But you probably wouldn't do that on a smartphone either. I mean, this doesn't eliminate the need for a larger screen. In fact, you can't use an Apple Watch without an iPhone 5 or later. But it's an adjunct to it. I guess it offends people that it's expensive, unnecessary. and of course, the way Apple talks about it does a little bit of is offensive to some. This is the most beautiful work of art. Johnny Ive. Sir Johnny Ive, most beautiful work of art. We've created a masterpiece. Yeah, I can see. But I'm very intrigued by it. And I'll have to get one, right? I guess I do. Just so I could talk about it. I think I want to get one. I'm offended I have to use an iPhone. I like Android. But I already have my Android Wear watch. There's some interesting things. We'll see. We shall see. And remember that $350, the base unit, does exactly the same everything that the $17,000 unit does. That's one thing that's a little unusual. In computing, usually you pay more money, you get faster processor, more memory, better screen. No, $350 gets you the same technology $17,000 does. It's just the dressing, the sapphire screen, the gold body, the leather clasped, gold clasped band. That's what. By the way, that band is $7,000. See, I don't know why that's offensive. That's funny. It's funny. It's not a. It's like, wow. Wow. Some people must really like gold. Must really like gold. There is a great blog, and I'll point people to, if you want to admire Apple's manufacturing prowess and the technologies used in this watch, a designer from Portland, Oregon, posted a great blog post. The blog is atomicdelights.com, and Greg Koenig, who does the blog, knows a lot about machining and metallurgy, so he can watch, and he did watch it with, you know, intensity, the Apple videos for the watch and deduced some of the manufacturing processes. And I know nothing about this stuff, but I found it fascinating. It's a good read, atomicdelights.com. We'll put a link in the show notes, as we do with everything I talk about. Worth reading, even if you mock the watch, just to see, you know, what's the magic juju that Apple brings to the table. With, I mean, you know, when you're making 75 million iPhones a quarter, 25 million a month, Greg points out that Apple is selling a 787 worth of iPhones every day. The weight of a Boeing 787 jetliner every single day. That's a lot of phones. So you have a company here that has really mastered. In some ways, you know, even if you're not a user or interested, and you think Apple's dumb, you have to admire the prowess, the manufacturing prowess that they bring to the table to make this. It's kind of a fascinating. And you know, they have a new MacBook, which I think I may not get. But, you know, it's an interesting product, too. Anyway, Apple announced all that stuff. One of the things that's maybe pretty important is HBO Now. We've heard this rumor. HBO is finally allowing people who don't have a cable subscription to watch HBO. So if you're a fan of Game of Thrones, for instance, or Veep, or any one of the HBO shows, you can now pay now it's $15 a month. That's it. You pay it directly to actually, in this case, directly to Apple, which then takes $5 and gives the rest, $10, to HBO. But that's only for the first 3 months. Apple's exclusive will dissolve in April, May, June, and, you know, in July. But $15 a month, and then you get all of HBO, past, present, and future, starting with, you know, The Sopranos, going to whatever they come up with next. It'll all be available to you for $15 a month. On the internet, we call that over-the-top programming because it's on the internet. It's going over the cable company. Even if you get your internet from the cable company, it's going over the top, sneaking in over the transom. And I think that's a revolution, the beginning of, we've been waiting for this for a long time, something called IPTV. Bad name, but the idea is, in fact, now that I think about it, a terrible name. But the idea is that you get a TV not from your cable company, but you get it, or your satellite dish, but you get it, or you're over the air, but you get it through the internet. And it's more flexible and maybe many more channels, that kind of thing. And Netflix is a good example of over-the-top IPTV. I think we're entering a magic era. We'll see. This could be the beginning of something big. 8888 Ask Leo. I'd love to talk about that or anything on your mind. Let's talk high tech. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I'm here for you, baby. This was when punk was young. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Isn't it funny how times changed that now, like, the punk songs of yesteryear sound so tame? But it seems like to me at the time they sounded very outrageous and... 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number. 888-827-5536. I'm not, we're in this together. I'm not alone here. Heather Hammond is with me. She is the phone ranger. She's answering your calls and helping me line up a fabulous group of people. Are you going to meerkat yourself again?
We just started and I already have 23 people. I love this game. It's like a sport.
Meerkat is a very hot topic these days. It's an iPhone app that allows you to live stream. It's tied to Twitter. As soon as you start the live stream, your Twitter tweets it. So if you want to follow Heather, you have to go to twitter.com/HBALM. Is that right?
Yeah.
HBALM. H-Balm. She's a soothing salve for the soul. And if you go to H-Balm, there'll be a link there that says, I'm meerkatting, and you click that. It's best to watch it if you're going to... No, now she's got... She's, she's, this has gone too far. She's now got a little card she holds up. It's like her 800 number. Just follow me on H-Balm. Call me. And then so then it streams live video. And then people can... You see who's watching, which is, I think, part of the addictive part for the broadcaster. Because, you know, here we don't know. It could just be you and me and nobody listening. Mm-hmm. Or it could be a million people. We just don't know. It'd be fun if we had just little faces above the screen that showed us everybody who was here.
Oh,
and
yeah.
We could talk to them. And then they can chat at you. So, but they do that by tweeting. Actually, you do it in Meerkat, but it turns it into a tweet. Twitter, here's the irony of this whole thing. Twitter last month bought a program that does the exact same thing called Periscope. And I think the folks who do Meerkat, the app Meerkat, and by the way, all of this is free. I'm not sure even why they're so competitive. But the folks who did Meerkat probably heard or the rumor that Twitter had bought this competitor and took 2 weeks and put out the product at the end of last month. And they timed it very well because right now the digerati, the geek elite, have gathered in Austin, Texas for an event called South by Southwest. There are about 50,000 of them down there. And they seem to be meerkatting their meerkats like as somebody else meerkats their meerkat, and it's all meerkatted together. And it's, you know, that's what happens sometimes at South by Southwest. It's how Twitter launched in 2007. It's how Foursquare launched in 2009. And so sometimes you get a critical mass of geeks together, and then they all tell each other, and they're all doing it. And that's what's happened with Meerkat. So Twitter yesterday gets upset and pulls the plug on a kind of a important part of Meerkat. Until yesterday, when you signed up for Meerkat, it would go out, check your Twitter, add everybody you followed on Twitter, and then let them know, and then you would be able to see if they were on Meerkat. And it was a very nice social network built on top of Twitter, but that's the problem. When you build your business on top of somebody else's business, like Twitter or Facebook, they can pull the rug out from under you, and that's what Twitter did. It's kind of mean-spirited. They did it because they're going to do their own thing. Periscope is not out yet. It's in beta only. But now it'll be fun to see. There could be a... This is very like House of Cards. It's very politics here. It'd be fun to see if this backfires on them, because it could be that the Meerkat crew We're going to have warring gangs. It'd be like the Crips and the Bloods. I'm a meerkatter. I'm a periscoper. Ah, have at you. I'll periscope your meerkat. And it could be that the meerkatters will be offended by Twitter's blatant power grab and become more devoted to Meerkat. Or it could be that when they better hurry up with Periscope. When Periscope comes out, they'll go, oh, well, that works better with Twitter. So who cares? I'm just going to use whatever works better with Twitter. I suspect there'll be two groups. There'll be clans. And Meerkat's got the head start right now. You don't care about this at all, do you? When you cover technology, you got to look for the... You got to make it fun.
But really, it is fun.
This doesn't help anybody. This is the problem, really, is the tech industry and all the glitterati, the digerati, care more about themselves. It's very insular, very incestuous. They call it a bubble, the Silicon Valley bubble. If you're in the bubble, you don't really understand what normal people think or care about. You just care about what your other venture capital funded friends are doing. Hey, is that a Maserati you're driving? I like my Ferrari a little better. Oh, you meerkat, will I periscope? Nobody in the real world even, knows what's going on. So I'm here. I'm your reporter. I'm your normal person reporter from a distance. I watch and mock and laugh and inform, because I think maybe you're interested in this. Meerkat could have some real value if you're a ski instructor or... You want to show people something cool or different. The fact that you could just stream like that, the quality's excellent. You need an iPhone. That's the only negative. Anyway, I've gone on too long.
I'm a little worried about it.
I'm worried about you. You seem to be you're doing it right now.
Well, if I were younger, I'd be like, hey, watch me ride in this shopping cart down a hill.
Oh yeah. Oh, you can. This could be the next YouTube. Or it could be a flash in the pan, and in a month from now, we'll forget the name even ever happened.
We'll see. But sign up for it, because it's fun.
You never really know on this stuff. Sometimes it's, Facebook, first time you heard about it, you probably thought, that's
dopey.
Remember,
everybody said, why don't I just email you?
Yeah, I'll just email you. What do I need? WhatsApp? What do I need Messenger for? I'll just email you.
And then you go, because I can share this to a million people at once or whatever.
Scares me because I've made my living live streaming for the last 10 years. Used to, I spent $1 million on a beautiful studio. Now anybody could do it with an iPhone. Let's take some calls. Who should we take? Let's talk to some normal people. What do you say?
Yes, and this is the height of normalcy. Wait, could that be a thing? Doug in Woodland Hills is doing something real and exciting, and he needs a little technology so he can capture it all.
I love it. Hi, Doug.
How are you doing?
Welcome.
I'm going up to Alaska on a fishing trip.
Oh, man, how fun. Salmon?
Hopefully.
Nice.
Actually, I'm more of the whitefish. I go more for halibut, lingcod.
Nice. So that's ocean fishing.
Yeah.
Nice.
You can do some stream fishing up there. There's some trout. So.
Well, it sounds great. I've been at the airport where guys are going up to Alaska and they have 80 coolers with them. They're filled with beer on the way up. They come back with salmon or fish on the way down.
There you go.
It's a great idea.
Expensive up there.
So what can I do to help you with your trip?
A buddy of mine is going with me, and we want to get a nice camera, something to take some good pictures.
Does it need to be waterproof?
Not really. We're pretty careful. If it falls in the water, it's pretty much going to be gone, because it's going to be 200-300 feet deep, unless you're willing to dive in after it.
Well, you can put – so here's my suggestion. Olympus makes a real – it's a very good camera, but it's a tough camera. So you can bang it around. It can fall in the water. You could put a little float on the wrist strap, and you'd never lose it. It's called the Tough TG3. I gave it to my daughter when she was going to Mexico, and I've used it in swimming pools. I love it. The Olympus, it's about $350. But if you want a fancier camera, I can give some recommendations on that, too, when we come back. Leo Laporte. The Tech Guy. More to come right after this. 8888 ask. Oh, hey, when you call, if you call me, you'll be using our fabulous Ring Central phone system. We love Ring Central. Ring Central is the phone system we use here in the Brick House Studios. Not for the radio show. We use a Telo system for that. But for our business lines. And what a thrill it was for me to discover Ring Central, because I was afraid I had to go to the big phone company. get a PBX in the basement. I didn't want to deal with that. But Ring Central solves that whole problem. It's a business phone system in the cloud. And boy, because it's in the cloud, it has such great features. Let me pull up the website for you so you can take a look. You can configure everything through a web browser. It's awesome. And you can use your smartphone to make phone calls from your business line, even your 800 number, text messages from your business line, receive text messages. Your calls are always encrypted and totally private. They use secure voice. Very strong solution. You keep your numbers. Of course you do. You can use toll-free numbers, too. We do. Local extensions, even if your business is spread out all over the world, it all works because it's the internet. Even vanity numbers. And customer support is free and 24/7. Best of all, no setup fees, no activation fees. Your phone system in the cloud is the best way to go. Now, RingCentral just announced Google for Work accounts with RingCentral. And this is, for us, great. This is what we use. We're a big Google house. And RingCentral for Google is phenomenal. Anything you want to do with RingCentral, you can do without leaving Google Apps. Use the dial pad on your screen to make calls from your Gmail account. Click on numbers in your email. Let me show you this. This is so awesome. You can click on numbers in your Gmail system. Where's the Google? There you go. You can, or contacts or calendar. You listen to voicemails directly within Gmail, and no problems like not deleting. You could do anything you want. Plus, there are many other features. Faxing from your Google Drive. I do this all the time. Viewing text messages, scheduling conference calls, and more. I love it. RingCentral, it starts at under $25 per person per month. And you can do it right now with a 30-day risk-free trial with a special offer, too, for our Twit listeners. For every desk phone you buy, you get a second phone free, up to 20 phones total. Call 800-543-9980. Take advantage of this offer right now, 800-543-9980, or go to ringcentral.com and use the promo code TWIT. RingCentral. Love it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We're talking, oh, this is so much fun. Doug's going to Alaska for a fishing trip. He wants a camera. Now, so there's a $350 pocket camera that's very tough, gets great both stills and video. And I've used it and I love it. The Olympus Tough camera. But you say you want something a little bit more high end?
Well, are you able to put other lenses
onto that one?
Is that one?
So that's a big, that's the big dividing line in cameras between the compact point and shoots, which have a fixed lens. You can't change it. And then the interchangeable lens cameras, the higher end interchangeable lens cameras. For that, the next step up, and I highly recommend it, is also from Olympus, the OMD line. These are a micro four thirds camera. So what does that mean? It means that's the size of the sensor is micro four thirds. And that's a little small. There are better quality. The size of the sensor in the camera is what determines the quality. In many cases, determines the quality of the image. But it's big enough to give you a nice image. And you can interchangeable lenses. And micro four thirds lenses are an industry standard. So you can get lenses from a lot of other companies as well. I'm a big fan of the OMD line. That'll set you back maybe $600, $700. And then you can get more lenses down the road.
Okay.
And then if you want to go past that, then you go to the APS-C size sensors. Nikon, Canon, and others make great APS-C size. The Canon Rebels are APS-C. They're very nice. Good starter cameras. It's a digital SLR, they call them. And any of the Canon Rebels would be fabulous. Those start about $500.
Would you recommend one of those over the OMD?
I tell you, I use the OMD, and then the next step up above that is in the $1,500 range is the Sony Alpha 7 series. Yeah, okay. I think that we've hit your pain threshold.
Exactly. Because, see, my buddy's paying for this, and the reason he wants the other lenses is they're also from Chile, and when they go on a family trip down to Chile, they want to be able to take pictures down there.
I think you can't go wrong with the OMD. There are several in the line, the EM1 and the EM5. They are fantastic. I just adore them. So it's 4/3 of an inch. So it's a big sensor. It's a little, it's an inch and a quarter sensor. That's what micro 4/3 means. That's okay. A big size sensor. APS-C is a little bigger than that. And then there's full frame sensors like that Alpha 7. But I think, boy, you know, a lot of people, on our last trip to Italy, that's what we carried is, Lisa and I both had our kind of twinsies OMDs, and we love them. Love them.
Okay.
And that's more affordable, and the lenses are more affordable, and there's a huge range of lenses. So you're getting it for your buddy. You're going to give it to him. He's going to take it down to Chile.
Well, I'm not giving it to him. I'm the one who's doing all the
research.
Calling you.
All right. He will not be unhappy with the Olympus OMDs. I think they're great.
Okay.
And that sounds like that's a little bit closer to your price range.
That it is.
Yeah. It's a very flexible system. It has a very good user interface. That's an important part of it. Touch screen. I think they're fabulous cameras.
Okay.
Highly recommended. All right. Have a great trip.
Thank you.
Oh, and then he takes it down to Patagonia. Chile has some beautiful, I went to the Torres del Paine. I guess that's what they call it, the national park there. Gorgeous. Gorgeous place. So, yeah, as you get more serious, you start to go to interchangeable lenses. That makes a big difference. And then you start getting bigger and bigger sensors. That makes a big difference. Then you start getting better and better lenses. And pretty soon you're spending thousands and thousands of – don't get me started. Very easy to make this hobby inexpensive. But, you know, every hobby is expensive if you really get into it, right? Except soccer. Soccer's not expensive. You can't get – unless you start going to the World Cup games. Tim is in Cape Cod, a great place to be.
Especially when 26 inches of our snow has melted in just the past week alone.
Oh, I know. I hear you. My mom's in Cranston, and I hear that you're having a little thaw. That's nice.
Yeah.
About time. Yeah.
Yeah. I have a question, Leo, or an opinion, or whatever, on GSM phones and radio band compatibility. And part of my questions have to do with, let's just take, for instance, the Galaxy S4. And I noticed the different model numbers that are out there that all claim to be GSM compatible have different radio bands that they support. And I was wondering, do you know of any type of resource out there or matrix that shows which carrier uses which band so that, you know, in the used phone selection world, I can pick the one that is most compatible? Or,
yeah.
Or have you? Okay.
Yeah, there's a great, it's called Phone Arena. I think that's it. There's a place where they have... GSM Arena. I apologize. Not Phone Arena. GSM Arena. And they have specs for every phone. You search for the phone. I think this is it. In their tools section. And it will give you the specs for every phone. And the spec you want is the radio frequency. And you and this is something people don't really think about. Getting a compatible smartphone. In the U.S., you buy it from a U.S. carrier. It's going to work in the U.S. But as you travel around the world, there are different technologies. There's GSM. There's CDMA, which is not widely used worldwide. There's the future LTE. Everybody will be LTE in the future. But even getting an LTE phone, you have to get LTE on the right radio frequencies, the right bands. And different countries and different carriers support different bands. So you need to figure this all out, which is the... There's another one here, PC Guy 88 in the chat room suggests willmyphonework.net. I like that. that might simplify. You put the phone in and then it says here's you select your brand and then it says here's and then you select what country and then you and then it'll tell you.
Yep,
but you're right, especially companies like Samsung that are truly global companies will release different phones for many different markets. You can buy a Galaxy Note 4 for Latin America, Asia, Europe, and the Middle East, North America. I think I've covered. There probably is an Oceania one as well, and those all have different frequencies and capabilities. In the case of Samsung, they even have different chipsets.
Yeah. Okay. Great. Funny story. I bought a phone from one of the refurbished recyclers out there, whose name I won't mention, but popped the phone out of the box, nice and clean, shrink wrapped, fired it up, and all my embedded apps were in Russian. So.
Oh, that's happened to me many times because I buy I like to get unlocked phones. I don't want to get carrier subsidized phones. I don't want the carrier stuff on there. And for review purposes, I want a plain phone. So I'll go to companies like Expansys, which sell international phones. And my Microsoft Lumia 1520 was all in Spanish because it was a Latin American edition. I've had the Russian edition of phones. I've had my current Galaxy Note 4 was the Chinese edition. Everything was in Chinese. And it's tough when it's not a Western alphabet to figure out now what. Where do I go? Yeah.
I will take a look in the chat room for that website, and I certainly appreciate it. One parting comment, though. You had a discussion yesterday. I don't know if it was on air or in the chat room about the Linksys WRT54s.
Yes.
And I tell you, I've had mine in place. I cannot kill it. I have tried to kill it, and it just keeps chugging. I put one out of my tool shed as a repeater so I can run around the yard on my riding lawnmower to listen to your program on my noise-canceling headphones.
That's awesome.
It's been out there in extreme temperature, you know, minus 10 to, you know, nearly 100 degrees, and the thing just doesn't quit.
We have how many W54, how many do we have in the basement, WRT54s? We have quite a few, don't we? We have dozens, because what happens is you can modify the firmware on these. These were a classic router, and I think Linksys still sells them for $25.
I bought all mine at yard sales for $1 a piece.
They're great. They're classics. And if they break, no big deal. You got 10 more in the basement. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888, ask Leo. That's the number. We're talking high tech. Yeah, your worst nightmare. A singing geek on the radio. Let's go on to Jonathan in Los Angeles. Hello, Jonathan. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Good morning, Leo. How's it going?
That's going great. How are you?
Been better.
Uh-oh.
My M8 kind of left us yesterday.
Oh, I love that phone.
Yeah.
Best phone of 2014 in many respects, the HTC One. Second generation is the M8. They've announced the M9, which is very similar. Everything you love about the M8, but a better camera, for one thing, a 20-megapixel shooter in the back.
Yeah, the ultrapixel isn't.
Yeah, that was a bad idea. Although I love HTC, and I think that made an excellent phone, beautiful phone. So what happened to it?
Got dropped. Pretty simple.
Oh, well, there you go.
No saving it.
You know, the new Galaxy S6 is repeating a mistake Apple made. It's all glass, front and back, which just means more surface area to smash.
Yeah.
I guess for a touchscreen, you have to have a glass screen, a big glass screen, so they're going to be vulnerable. So what do you want? What can I do to help you? I'm sorry, besides give you the deepest sympathy, because I love those phones.
Thank you. Just your opinion on what should I get? I mean, should I get a refurbished M8 for like $3-something and then wait for something else, or go with a G3 or a Z8? I love the new Moto X, but the battery's not really good at all.
How is your battery life on your HTC One?
It was great. I rarely had to put it into power saving except when I was traveling abroad, and that was for Spotify all day, and it worked.
So, I'll tell you what that tells me, because I, having used an M8 for years, well, for a year, I did not get that great battery life. So that tells me that you're a good user. You don't overdraw your phone.
I mean, I think I'm a power user at times. I'll watch a lot of stuff on my phone instead of my computer.
Wow.
But it's just either streaming Spotify or Pandora or watching a bunch of car videos and stuff, to be honest, and a little bit of Facebook.
I think that M9 is if you're happy with your M8, M9 is one to look at. I don't know, and I'm looking at GSM Arena. We mentioned that the specs. It's the expected release is it says March 2015. It certainly will be by April, because the GS6, the Galaxy X6, is April. It comes out in April, so I would expect that you'll be able to get this in the next month. Of course, you need a phone now, don't you?
Yeah. Everyone seems to conveniently have sold their spare phones.
This is a good time, by the way, to buy a phone, because everybody's selling used phone, because everybody's selling their phones in preparation for the new phones. You know what I would recommend? Here's one. Here's a crazy thought. It's only $350, $300 if you get 32 gigs. The OnePlus One. That's brand new.
Heard of it. Thought of it, but isn't the OnePlus 2 coming out?
It is. Well, look, at the M9's coming. Anything you buy, there's something going to replace it in the month.
Yeah.
There's nothing. The Note. Okay, here's one thing you can buy that won't be replaced till September. The Note 4, which I use, and that's my phone of choice, and that's I love it.
You had the OnePlus One before, right?
I still have the OnePlus One. I actually bought a second one.
Is it your daily phone?
It is not. The Note 4 is, because I like the screen better. But the OnePlus One is very similar to your HTC One, but I really like it, and it's cheap, even new.
Yeah, and I know how to get an invitation.
Well, you can ask me. I'll send you one. But if you already have somebody who'll give you one.
My idea was going to cost me money on Craigslist.
No. You know what? I'm going to put you on hold and give Heather your email address, and I'll mail, because they just gave me another invitation. I don't get very many. I don't know why, but I just got an email. You've got an invitation.
I'm on T-Mobile, which I know you really like.
Love it.
You had that phone on T-Mobile?
Yep. Works great with T-Mobile.
Works great.
This is the thing that's great about the HTC One. It's unlocked. $300 for 32 gigabytes, and it is in every respect full specs. It's got everything your phone. And by the way, better battery life than the M8.
Really?
So you should be able, if you were able to get through the day in the M8, you will get through the day, no question, on the OnePlus.
What about upgrading to the new firmwares? Because they run a version of
Cyanogen. They use Cyanogen Mod. They will get, in fact, very soon, I think in the next month, we'll get CM12, which is the Lollipop version of Cyanogen Mod. I love Cyanogen Mod. The way it's implemented on the HTC One, this is, folks, a form of Android. You know, everybody has their own form. HTC has Sense. Samsung has TouchWiz. The only non-skinned version of Android is from Google, pretty much. Motorola is pretty clean. And the Cyanogen Mod is very much skinned. But
I thought it was a complete rework of the OS.
Well, it's still Android.
And it was just like a sort of like an offset.
Well, there's a difference between the one that comes on the OnePlus One and the one you download.
Okay.
The one on the OnePlus One is really designed to work perfectly with that hardware, and it does. And they're working on 12. That will be the last version, I believe, of Cyanogen Mod for OnePlus. OnePlus is doing their own.
That's what I read.
Oxygen Android, and that's an unknown quantity. I'm presuming you're getting this phone not forever, for 6 months, until you see which of the new phones you want.
To be honest, I mean, I didn't mean to come off sounding as if I care about my device being old. It's just, there doesn't look like there's going to be any significant hardware or software jumps. I don't care about a quad HD screen because I'm not going to have a 6-inch phone. The processors are great. Another gig of RAM could be great, but, you know, I was pretty happy with the M8, and I would have been for another year.
I know. Isn't that sad? I think you'd be very happy with the OnePlus One.
Okay.
It's not as gorgeous, I have to say. The M8, HTC is all aluminum.
I kept it in
the
case.
you don't care. Yeah, if you keep it in a case, I don't even know why people, you know, rhapsodize about how gorgeous a phone is. You keep it in a cheap plastic case, it's what it looks like. So it doesn't matter, does it?
Yeah.
And you dropped it and you still broke it. Oh, man.
It was a bad fall, but to be honest, the OtterBox symmetry, their tiny little case saved it so many times traveling.
I'm amazed you were able to break it in an OtterBox. Those things are tough.
It went directly face first.
Yeah, see, if you hit a point with the glass, nothing can protect that. Ooh, I just did it. I'm sorry. Sorry, little phone.
No body dents. It just shattered. Yeah,
if it hits wrong, any phone will break. There's no magic there. So you just have to hope that you don't drop it. You know what I do on some of my phones? I get a hand strap. That gives you one last chance to catch it as it's falling through the air.
Yeah.
I think if you know, money is obviously an issue. You can also go to a used phone site, but to get a brand new OnePlus for I would get the 64 gig version, 350.
Does it have expandable memory?
Nothing. Nope.
Nothing? Okay.
No replaceable battery, no expandable memory. For that, I would get a. Do you like big screens? You might look at a Galaxy Note 4, but it won't cost you $350.
I actually don't. I think a package of the LG G3 with that size of a screen is the biggest I'm willing to go.
The G3 is great, except because they put a quad HD screen on. Everybody does this. They say, we're going to have more battery life, and then we're going to put a very high-res screen on and kill the battery life.
Exactly.
It's very disappointing. This is one of the things about the OnePlus. It's a 1080p screen. Gee, it's terrible. It's a high-def screen. It's plenty. And it's one of the reasons it gets such great battery life.
Would there be any other phone that you'd recommend? Or
there's a ton.
Totally avoid?
I would avoid the Galaxy S5, like the
plague.
I
agree. I had it for a month. I hated it.
Like the plague. I'm trying to think if there's anything else I hate. My favorite phones from last year, we actually had a little debate. We have a product review show on the podcast network called Before You Buy, and we wanted to pick the best phone of the year, and we had a little debate, and certainly the HTC One was in there, but I ended up choosing the OnePlus One because of its extraordinary battery life, and it's an amazing price. There's no phone with those specs that is that inexpensive.
It's like when the Nexus 5 first came out.
Yeah.
That was a good phone, too. Just
another good choice. Yeah, Google's killed it. Bad camera, bad battery. The OnePlus One has a much better camera and an amazing battery. It's easily the battery leader, except for the if you get a Xiaomi Mi 4, that has great battery life.
Never heard of it.
Yeah, it's Chinese. I have no problem recommending the OnePlus One. And if you hang on, let me put you on hold. Heather will get your email address. And I'm pretty sure I still have that. I haven't given it away. If they haven't taken away my invite, I'll be glad to.
Can I ask you about the new Moto X? What do you think of that compared to the first one?
Love it. But no battery life.
Same thing.
Love it. I got the leather back. Because I'm, you know, just kind of leathery. And it's a beautiful phone. If it would, my minimum for a phone, I got to get 16 hours on it in the way I use it. And because that means it'll get me through the day. And if it doesn't get me through the day, I don't mind if I have 40% or 30% left at 7 p.m., but it's got to get me through the day. And if it doesn't, it's not going to be a keeper. And there are very few phones that'll do that.
Yeah.
The M8 did not for me.
Really?
Yeah, so it did for you. With that, that's good.
I was honestly surprised. I mean, especially traveling, power save mode all day, and I had music.
Yep. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Our show today brought to you by ZipRecruiter. If you're doing a little hiring, ZipRecruiter can make it so much easier. If you're the HR person at your company or just, you know, it's your company and you have to do all the hard stuff, the bad stuff, you know how hard it is to hire people, to find people. ZipRecruiter solves that in a beautiful, elegant way. You know, the internet has made hiring easier. Absolutely. You've got all these job boards, but part of the problem is there are all these job boards and you don't know which board is going to be the right board for the audience you're trying to reach, the kind of people you're trying to reach. ZipRecruiter simplifies it in many ways. The first step is with one click of the mouse, you're posting a job submission to more than 50 job boards, plus social sites like Facebook and Twitter. Boom, like that. But it's better even than that. It's better even than that because the responses, the resumes and so forth, don't come. People aren't calling you. They're not emailing you. They go into the ZipRecruiter interface. So it's very easy for you to go through them, to scan them, to screen them, and to pick the right person right away. ZipRecruiter also has their premium traffic boost, which will triple the number of candidates you receive for each post, which is amazing. I have to say, ZipRecruiter is a great solution, and we've been using it. In fact, we're not alone. 250,000 businesses use ZipRecruiter, and I want you to try it right now. Get quality applicants, rate them, screen them, and hire the right person fast at ZipRecruiter. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/techguy, and you'll get 30% off your first traffic boost. ZipRecruiter.com/techguy. You also get a 4-day trial free. The best way to hire. If you're hiring, do it. ZipRecruiter.com/techguy. We thank them so much for their support of the Tech Guy podcast. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here. I am the Tech Guy. Yes, I am. Time to talk computers and the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, anything on your mind. 8888-ASK-LEO is the phone number. 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. You can Skype me, too, if you're not there. Our website, techguylabs.com. Please use that whenever you have the urge. It's free. It's open. There's no sign-up. There's no charge. And every show is there. Including audio and video from past shows, so you can watch and listen. You can go hour by hour, day by day, even question by question, read the answers. And if you choose, you can even add your own thoughts. So sometimes people say, oh, no, Leo, you're wrong. Well, you don't have to shout at the radio. You just go to the website And if you're reading and you read comments that you think are good, upvote them and they'll come up to the top there. They'll rise to the top. TechGuyLabs.com. Dan is next, Huntington Beach, California. Hi, Dan. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. How you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
Oh, I'm hanging in here. And I also wanted to thank you for having impeccable timing. Last weekend, I had all of 10 minutes to listen to your show because of my son's baseball games and whatnot. And you happened to talk about the Apple repair notice on the 2011 MacBook Pros.
Yeah.
And I heard you talk about it, I don't know, months ago. And, you know, at that time, there wasn't Apple wasn't doing anything about it.
There is a video problem in MacBook Pros from 2011 and 2012, I think.
Yeah. It's 11 through 13.
For 13,
and okay. Yeah, certain ones with certain AMD logic boards. And so I went on, looked at basically off of your show notes. I looked at, you know, the Apple, looked up the Apple repair notice. My MacBook Pro qualified. I've been having the problems since pretty much since I got the laptop, and it's been getting more and more consistent. Anyways, I went and looked up the repair notice, scheduled an appointment to take it into the Apple store on Thursday. I got it back yesterday. They replaced the logic board, no charge. It's running excellent. And so anyways, I wanted to thank you for it.
Yay.
Mention that, anybody that's having any of those, display problems or the random crashing, because what would happen is the display would get all distorted and sometimes not turn back on when you come back from standby.
Wow.
And then it would randomly crash.
Yeah.
Just hard crash, reboot. So...
And what was Apple's response? Did they send a box? How did that?
So I called or chatted, actually.
Yeah.
I went on to their chat support, and they said that they could send me a box and do all that, but it would be quicker if I
bring it in.
Went into the Apple store,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so on the chat, they scheduled me an appointment at South Coast Plaza MacBook store or
nice.
Apple store.
Good.
And just took it in, and I was amazed with, they said it would take 3 to 5 days. I took it in Thursday, got it back Saturday.
Every company has hardware issues. It's just, there's no way to make a perfect technology device. The real test of a company is how they respond, how they handle it. And for a while, Apple was not impressive in this. They were denying it. But once they decided, there is a problem, we figured it out, they're very good about repairing and replacing it. You're out of warranty, certainly.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I have a late 2011 15-inch MacBook Pro.
Wow.
And, the only changes I made to it was I maxed out the RAM. But
And they didn't mind that, huh? They didn't say, you opened the door.
Yeah, I read about that. That I guess if you've made any other changes, swapped out for, especially if you swap out the hard drive, go to solid state drive.
Yeah, that's what our caller had done.
Yeah, exactly. I remember that. But if you have any, I was concerned about the RAM. I didn't mention it, but they didn't say anything about it either. So, and I didn't buy their RAM either.
I think you're allowed to upgrade the RAM. I think that's a normal thing to do.
I would hope so.
Yeah.
But,
yeah. So that's good to know.
Well, the other thing is interesting, too. When I took it in, they ran some, more in-depth testing to make sure that my MacBook qualified. And it didn't, it said it qualified by, the date, the chipset, the logic board, all that stuff. But when they ran the test, it didn't show that it would qualify. But the guy at the Apple store wrote it up saying that it qualified and so on, and they took it, sent it in anyways,
right.
And they replaced it. So,
good thing to remember is that the genius at an Apple store has a considerable amount of leeway. At the end of the day, he has to kind of justify everything he's done to the manager, but the genius can give you new stuff. They have a lot of leeway, so it's always nice to be nice to your genius, and they'll
absolutely.
Be nice to you. Hey, I'm glad to hear it worked out, Dan. And by the way, a really good tip for anybody who has a late model Macintosh, I don't know if this is... was in Mavericks, but it's in Yosemite, the latest version of OS X. If under the Apple there's the About This Mac entry, do that. And I don't know when they started doing this because I didn't even know about it. But you can find out if your Mac is eligible for a recall or a service upgrade by doing About This Mac, and then there's a tab on the window that says Service. And you can find out if your Mac is under AppleCare, when AppleCare or the regular warranty you want it running out, and whether there's a recall. You don't have to enter in your serial number or anything. It does it for you automatically. It'll pull up a web page and it'll say, let me see. There's your serial number. Here's your date. You can actually see what model you have, and you can see what service you have. And if there is a recall, a service order, they will put that up there as well. And that's a very handy thing. Other companies should emulate that. It makes it very simple. You know, every time I call in with a Dell problem, which is rare, they say, okay, what's your service number? And you have to look on the bottom and figure out and read it and get magnifying glass if you're old like me. And then my latest Dell laptop has a little nice little door on the bottom. You open up the door, and there you can see it. You know, I got a new Chromebook Pixel. Google's selling the second edition of theirs. And I had heard this, but this is the first I've seen of it. The FCC changed the rules about, you know, when you buy an electronics product, you'll see FCC Class B approval, some information printed on the outside of it. It's kind of ugly. You may also see approvals for the European Communications Commission and so forth. The equipment authorization. The FCC changed the requirements fairly recently, and they no longer have to print it. They can put it on in the software. So when I do my About This Chromebook, it's kind of nice. There's nothing printed on the outside or anything. When I do About This Chromebook, it'll tell me the FCC approval information, the certification. It's the first one I've seen where they don't do that anymore. I think it was Apple that really wanted this rule changed because they didn't like messing up the beautiful lines of the thinnest iPhone we've ever made. It's got this printing on it from the FCC. It's driving Johnny Ive crazy. I think Johnny probably called somebody and said, can you fix this? And they did. So now your FCC approval notice, which nobody ever paid any attention to, does not have to be printed on the body of the device. 8888 ask Leo. Yes, somebody asked in the chat room, has the FCC released its rules for net neutrality? Those rules were released this week. And it's more than 300. I think it's almost 400 pages. It's a long list. No, I haven't read them. I'm sure somebody will, but if you wish to, you can go to fcc.gov/openinternet and read the Open Internet Order, and I believe the rules have been published now, if you wish to read them. Have fun. You know what? If you have trouble sleeping, it might be enjoyable. Fortunately, there are smart lawyerly types who are reading it as we speak, trying to figure out what it means, and we'll get their review. I tell you what, I trust the EFF, the Electronic Frontier Foundation, EFF.org. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 7 million dollars. $7 million. Robin Thicke had to pay because this family of Marvin Gaye sued, saying, this song, Blurred Lines, it was such a big hit, sounds so much like Marvin Gaye's Got to Give It Up from 1977. The jury said, yes, it was copyright infringement, but people are a little... Now, I don't know. You know, we're on in L.A., and there are probably a lot of people involved in the music industry listening, so I don't want to offend you. And if you want, I'd love to hear your comments on our website, techguylabs.com. But a lot of people say this is a very bad decision for copyright, because the issue is not that the tune is the same. And the question is, can you copyright the presentation? You can copyright the melody. We know that. And there have been some very famous cases. Remember, He's So Fine was the same as George Harrison's My Sweet Lord. So they sued and won. There have been some really, I mean, that's the same melody. And these things happen. You know, I don't think George thought, let me see if I can duplicate He's So Fine. He just had that in his head. And I imagine if you're writing a song, it's hard not to kind of do that. But the issue on this verdict is significant, because essentially the jury said you can copyright the vibe. You can copyright the feel of the song. And a lot of the music industry, the Los Angeles Times quotes Gregory Butler, who's a composer and a producer, he says, you've made it illegal to reference previous material. I'm never going to come up with something so radically different that it doesn't contain references to something else. So the melody wasn't the same in Blurred Lanes, but the beat was. There was a real similarity in the rhythm and the crowd, the party crowd in the background. Attorneys and others are concerned that the jury was swayed by a love for Marvin Gaye, which I share, and perhaps didn't make the right decision in terms of copyright. And they're very worried that it could spell a dark period for music. It's very hard, I would imagine, to come up with something completely original. And if you have to worry about copying the vibe as well as copying the melody, yikes. Ray Parker Jr., Ghostbusters, and Huey Lewis in the News, I Want a New Drug. Same, kind of basically same song. Those make sense. Parody's okay. Somebody's saying, well, what about Weird Al Yankovic? Well, that's parody. And I believe that Weird Al does pay a license fee anyway. I don't think he has to. I don't think there's any question that Robin Thicke and Pharrell were parodying Marvin Gaye. Did they know about... Got to Give It Up? Of course they did. Who doesn't? I mean, that anybody who loves music loves that song. And I think it's probably not a theft, but homage. It's an interesting question. Back to the phones we go. 8888 to ask Leo. Ken in Merced. Ken, you're on.
Hi, Leo.
How are you?
Doing well. What my question was, what type of tablet, like a Winbook or something like that, might I be able to use that doesn't have to be connected to the internet to use voice to text?
Ah, that's a good question.
I have an old Kurzweil program from 1990. It works on 95.
If you have enough memory, you can use Dragon, naturally speaking. I don't know about Kurzweil, but there are plenty of offline voice to text speech recognition programs. Dragon's my favorite. I know for a fact Dragon will work fine on the Winbook TW-802. Now, I mentioned, because it was so cheap for $69, the Winbook TW-700, but it doesn't have enough storage. It's only a 16-gig internal hard drive, and it's only 1 gig of RAM. And both of those are, I think, too scant for Dragon. But Dragon, I know, because one of our chatters has done it, will work fine on their $100 Winbook TW-802, because it's got, I think, 32 gigs of storage and 2 gigs of RAM. So you absolutely can do it.
The Winbook 2, and that'd be
the Winbook, it's the TW-8...
Computer, doesn't it?
TW-802, yeah, it's Windows 8.1. It's a full computer.
Yeah, but how much does Dragon speak now, about $100?
Oh, there's different versions. Yeah, I think they have some as low as that. You got to be careful, because if you get the big version, it's hundreds and hundreds of dollars. But it's about 100? Yeah, I think so. And that's by far the best. I don't know how good the Kurzweil is. Ray Kurzweil, genius, really invented this category, I think. But the world has moved on. You raise an interesting question, because I think what you want to do is dictate, like, text, right? Passages of text. But,
well, yeah, Dad's almost deaf, so
perfect.
It's easier for him to read it than to hear it.
Perfect. So you could talk to Dad, and he'll read it. But most of the text dictation stuff on Google and Siri from Apple and Microsoft's Cortana, all of those go back to the server for the hard work, because they're designed for phones. So, in fact, there was a big furor over the Samsung televisions. Samsung, disclaimer, said, by the way, you know, whenever you talk to our television and give it commands, it'll send it back to a third party, Nuance, the makers of Dragon, as it turns out, and they will analyze it, and so your stuff may be saved and recorded. And people were all up in arms. Well, what else? What did you think was happening? The TV isn't smart enough to recognize your speech, nor is your Android device or your smartphone, and so they have to send it back to the servers. In fact, and Apple doesn't publicize this, both Apple and Google save all of your text. Apple's never said that they do, but we believe they do, because an Apple employee revealed this, that he was reading through these old texts or listening to them. And we know Google does, because if you go to google.com/dashboard, you can listen back to your old dictations. It's kind of weird, kind of creepy. Don't do it in public.
Yeah. Well, what people think they're doing when they're dancing in front of their connection.
Yeah, well, I don't think they're – I hope they're not watching you. Anyway, Dragon on Amazon, the basic version. Thanks, PDO999 in our chat room. $99. It's $100. If you get Windows 8.1 now on a WinBook, the 802, you'll be able to upgrade to Windows 10, which I believe Cortana in Windows 10 will do dictation. The question is, will it do it offline? And that's, I think, maybe not. I don't know. That's a good question. If I dictate right now in Siri or Google Now dictation or Cortana, in every case, it's sending it back to the servers. But Dragon does not. Dragon does not. And that's a nice thing. Almost all of it ends up going back to Nuance, which is the company that bought up all of the text-to-speech companies, including the very best of them, Dragon. And that's who you'll buy Dragon, naturally speaking, from. I think that program is pretty impressive. My friend David Pogue uses it not to write his books, but to write his indexes. It makes it very fast for him to flip through the book and say, page 300, here's a part where I describe how Microsoft Word's menus work and so forth. So doing it offline, I know Windows has built-in text speech-to-text, but I don't think it's offline. I think for that you need to buy a third-party program. 88, if correct me if I'm wrong, and you could do that in two ways, calling 8888-ASK-LEO or visiting the website, techguylabs.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More to come right after this. There he is. Chris Marquardt, our photo guy, joins us. Most weeks, right about this time, to talk about digital photography. Chris, I don't know if you heard earlier in the show, we had a guy going to Alaska for a little fishing expedition. And
I was not around when he
was. Yeah, I recommended the Olympus. There's a point-and-shoot from Olympus, the Tough Olympus Tough cameras, I think the 350, but I've had a number of them in that model, and they're great. They're waterproof. You can drop them in the water. You can shoot underwater.
Most important question, does it float?
I don't think it floats, but I think you could put a float on it or a leash or a tether.
Because if you drop it in the water, it's gone.
Yeah. So well, it's funny that you should say that. That was his point exactly.
Some of those tough cameras actually float, you know?
Yeah, no, I know. Yeah. He said that he wanted an interchangeable lens camera, so I stepped up to the OMD, Olympus OMD. You like those? Have you used those at all?
Oh, the OMDs are great, but they are not as rugged. They are not waterproof. Right. They don't have all these features that these rugged, especially rugged cameras have. But the image quality is amazing. Micro Four Thirds gets you a good choice of lenses. So nothing wrong with that.
And then if you're willing to spend $10,000, you can get a Canon 1D. That's waterproof.
I wouldn't drop it in the water.
I wouldn't
water.
Swim
sure.
with it. My
I'm
friend
sure.
Russell.
I wouldn't dive with it. No.
You know, Russell, our IT guy's a big photographer. I have a photographer. He has a 1D. And it got dirty. He rinsed it off. He said people were freaking
out.
Yeah,
they are water sealed. So these super high-end DSLRs are water sealed. And if you have the right lenses on, because you also have to have a lens that can take that. So if you have the right combination, yeah, you will be able to rinse them off. But
isn't that funny?
I think this mostly made for like rough environments
right.
where there's
Antarctica or it's
water
it's,
spray Antarctica yeah, yeah. Don't and, swim on boats with and it. Things. Yeah.
So what? So we have an assignment. We're going to review our assignment. I'm excited.
Yes, we do. The Awake assignment.
Each week, Chris
has been up for a month.
Comes up with a word or concept each month, I should say, with a word or concept that he wants us to illustrate. Really, the only point of this is to get out there and take a picture. So we have lots of submissions to the Tech Guy group on Flickr. Here's a picture of a Starbucks cup.
Awake assignment.
So the only reward is that some people will get picked for a review on the air. And again, this is crazy because who's going to review photography on the radio? We are. So let's start with picture number one.
Yes.
Sunrise.
Picture number one by Ted Holm. Yeah. Sunrise over my home. And, you know, it's one of those pictures that, okay, to get that, you have to be a bit technical. So that's most likely a DSLR that was taken.
What is hard about this? Because it's the bright sun.
It's the bright sun, so you have an extreme dynamic range, very bright and very dark in the foreground. You're shooting into the sun, so you have to do manual exposure to make sure the camera doesn't overcompensate.
Yeah, if I took this picture, all I'd get was a big bright blob and nothing else.
and And you also need a long lens, a lens with a long focal length. In this case, it was a 340 millimeter lens to get the sun bigger on the screen. Otherwise, you just have this tiny white dot and it doesn't really work. This works quite well. And what I like is the layering. You know, you see the foreground with some trees and then some buildings that are a silhouette. And then there's a layer of a hill. And then there's a next layer of a hill. If you look to the right, there are actually three layers of a hill and to the left as well. So it's a nice kind of depth layering and the nice warm color.
I would print this and put this on my wall. This is a totally gallery quality image. Very nice.
Yep.
And as you say, technically difficult to achieve.
Well, it's hard to do with a point-and-shoot camera with a smartphone. But yeah. So you will need a bit more equipment, but you will also need to know how to use it. It's not just getting an expensive camera and getting a long lens and then just shooting. No, you have to kind of know what you're doing.
Could you burn your lens? I mean, your sensor with that? I mean, like...
Well, I wouldn't shoot into the sun like a long exposure, like 20 seconds. But that kind of an exposure, that's a 640th of a second. It's not going to hurt
How
you.
Did, is it HDR? Yeah. How did he get the background not to be too dark when the sun is so bright?
Well, good question. Possibly. Possibly some
we don't
HDR
know.
Here.
Yeah, we don't know.
I think you could probably get this with one picture.
It's kind of like shooting the moon, isn't it?
You know, the sun is very low in the sky, so there's a lot of atmosphere between you and the sun, and so it must have been really, really dark.
Right. All right, picture two.
Next one by Pixel Pusher. The Tachyons Are Awake.
I love this. What is this?
Isn't
I have
that,
no idea what this
wild,
is.
Well, the description kind of gives it away. It's an abstract fireworks photo. He calls that the spiral technique. So pretty much what he or she did is move the camera while shooting fireworks. And that is really kind of, that yields some really interesting results. In this case, you have all these streaks of light that come from the fireworks, but then they are all like mixed up and squiggly and all over the screen. And this is a really interesting effect.
I like it that he calls it tachyons. It's not. It's just a light painting with fireworks. But
yeah, but it's a creative title, isn't it?
I love it. That's really beautiful. And it's really two colors, just blue and black, maybe a little white. It's very simple.
And it's a really, I mean, that's a thing you can do with digital photography. Go ahead and experiment. Have a long exposure. Yeah, why always have the camera on a tripod? Move it. See what happens.
See what happens.
Do some experimentation. So good job on that.
By the way, if you would like to see these images, we'll put them all in the links to all of them in the show notes at Tech Guy Labs. Or you could just go directly to the Flickr group, the Tech Guy group, and all of them are there, along with a lot of other great submissions. Finally, Taylor Wilbanks.
Can you guess why I chose this picture?
It's a picture of a road and a covered bridge, and the sun is flaring like crazy over on the right-hand side. You even see rings from the light flare.
There is so much technically wrong with this picture. I'm doing air quotes here, wrong, you know. It has so much emotion, and it has been taken with an iPhone. That's what I like about it. It's a very, very, it's a nice picture. It's got all these colors in it, and the lens flare kind of gives it this real life, right in the moment kind of feeling.
Boy, I would never guess an iPhone. Yeah.
It's just some app that does some filtering. There's definitely some filter involved here. You know, it creates this huge thing of emotion.
You feel like you're at a sunset in a beautiful country road. You really feel like, yes, it's gorgeous. You're there.
Makes you feel good. Gives you warmth.
Yeah.
Makes you feel good. It's just a moment of true life, and I like that.
You know, Apple has really kind of started to sell this idea that iPhone photography can be great photography. If you go to Apple's website, they are actually highlighting iPhone photographs, and they are stunning.
They have this whole gallery, yes.
Yeah.
And you know what I think about that gallery? I think Apple's trying to highlight that this is all done with the iPhone 6, and the iPhone 6 is so good. I think it much more says that, yep, you don't need this huge, big, fat, expensive camera, but a smaller camera will also do, because the photographer in the end does take the picture.
Well, and another point, and certainly the last picture you talked about illustrates that, you also need to understand your camera and know what situations are good and what aren't. None of these are taken, for instance, at a birthday party lit by candles or anything like that. They're all in broad daylight.
That would be a bit tough for even an iPhone.
But if you know your camera and you know what it's good at, you can get amazing shots even with a camera phone. And these iPhone shots are fabulous. We'll put a link to that and all of the pictures in our show notes. Chris Marquardt, he's doing a couple of workshops in the States. Chris is from Germany. He's actually calling from Germany. But you're going to be in New York and San Diego in October.
I'll be in New York and San Diego. I'll go to Ethiopia in January 2016. We just released that one.
Neat.
I'll be in Donegal in Ireland in September.
Wow.
So lots of tours.
DiscoverTheTopFloor.com, the place to find out more. Chris Marquardt joins us every week. What's our new assignment? Quick, we got 10 seconds.
The new assignment is asleep.
Asleep. We had a wake. Now it's time to go to sleep. I'll tell you what, I will tell everybody how they can participate when we come back. Thank you, Chris. Have a great week. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Our show today brought to you by Prosper. What an interesting idea. You know, we talk a lot about innovation and new stuff and how the internet's changing businesses. And one business that's really being changed, believe it or not, by the internet is the bank loan. The idea of going to ask a bank or friends or your credit cards for a few extra bucks. No, no, not anymore. Prosper.com. I want you to visit Prosper.com. It's a peer-to-peer lending marketplace. That's technically what it is. People sign up, and they have, I think, 2 million people now signed up at Prosper.com. They sign up to lend. They sign up to borrow. And Prosper does kind of like, it's like kind of a matchmaking service for lenders and borrowers. You can go to Prosper.com right now. In fact, go to Prosper.com/twit so that we get credit for it. Prosper.com/twit. And you can get a quote. Borrow as much as $35,000. You get the money in as little as 5 days. Interest rates are fixed. They're low. It's a lot better than your credit card. In fact, one great use for Prosper is to pay off the high rate credit card. Just get it out of there, and save huge amounts of money. Prosper.com/twit. Put it into your business. Fix up the house. I'm sure you could think of a lot of things you could do with up to $35,000. It is a great idea, and they have lent out millions now, more than $1 billion. It works. If you go to prosper.com/twit, get a quote, get a loan. For a limited time, you can get a $50 Visa gift card with your loan, $35,000 in your account, as few as 5 days, and a $50 Visa gift card. That's prosper.com/twit. That's a special offer just for you guys because you didn't fast forward through the ad. Prosper.com. See? Stay tuned. You get stuff. Prosper.com/twit. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. That's the number. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or New Jersey. Jeff on the line from Los Angeles. Hi, Jeff.
Hey, Leo, how you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
Good, good, good. So listen, this is a cord-cutting question. Before I ask you about cord-cutting from Time Warner, I want to itch a little, okay?
Okay.
I've had it.
I'm done. I'm through.
Okay, listen, the brilliant people over at Time Warner. So I have Time Warner home phone, and I have voicemail to email. Oh, by the way, $180 a month.
Wow.
For 15 channels that I watch, okay?
For 15 channels. Well, but you're also including internet, right? Still, that's a lot of money.
Phone, internet, and all the things. It's $180 a month. And yeah, I have HBO, Showtime, and Cinemax, but I only watch 15 channels. But listen,
right. And you probably don't even watch that many shows.
No, not that.
A handful of shows. How much time is there in the week? You might watch 5 different shows. That's it.
Well, I'm in the business, in the film and TV business, so I sample a lot of stuff, but it's only on total of 15 channels. But listen to this. Home phone. Listen to the brilliant people over at Time Warner. So I have voicemail to email. No longer do I pick up my phone and interface with some stupid voice menu to listen to my voicemail.
Yeah.
Nor do I go on their website to listen to my
voicemail. No, they just email it to you. Isn't that nice?
Right, but here's the deal. Listen to this stupidity, okay?
Okay, calm down now. I don't want any fleeting expletives on the air here.
I just said stupidity. I know that there are bigger issues in the world right now than this, but for what it's worth, $180 a month, when they send that email to me, their server still keeps that email, and there is no way to tell their server or set it to get rid of it. So If I don't pick up the phone and interface with it or go online, it gets full. And the only way Time Warner lets me know that is when one of my, a friend of mine calls and says to me, hey, listen, Jeff, you're full. You're not getting messages anymore. It's telling me that I can't take a message. And there's no way for Time Warner to shut off the saving of my messages. So every week or two, I either have to check on it or find out I'm not getting messages.
That's terrible.
That's great.
Hey, here's the good news. They're about to merge with Comcast, so everything's going to be better.
But you're going to tell me how to get rid of them and cut the cord anyway. But
yes,
wait,
it's time. Yeah.
Last night, they had a service problem in my area, and guess what the result of that was? My entire DVR erased everything on
DVR.
Now, I'm in the film and TV business, and I have a lot of work to do with client shows I needed to watch and transcribing off of other shows. Guess what?
They're gone.
Gone. Okay, so that was it. I said, I'm calling Leo Laporte, and he's going to tell me, A, how to cut the cord.
Yes.
Because you have an advertiser on there that you always say can help you with that. But also, Leo, here's the deal.
Yes.
I need to be able to watch everything on DVR, nothing live. So how do I get something that can integrate Netflix, Amazon, HBO, and let's say I'm getting stuff off of the air. How the hell do I get a device that
you can't record all that stuff? One of the reasons your industry, my friend, loves streaming video from Netflix and others is there's no easy way to save it.
Yeah, but here's the thing. I don't care so much about saving stuff.
Yeah, because you can watch it again, right? I mean, you have it.
Yeah, but how do I find a way? So basically, I only need something that's going to DVR stuff that's on let's say I want to. How do I get, Logo or HGTV? And
you don't. You got to have a cable account. So this is we're right in the middle of a big transition, but many many channels are still so beholden to Time Warner and the other cable companies that they don't dare go over the top. They don't dare do internet only because the cable companies probably have, certainly when we were doing Tech TV, there was in the contract, it says specifically, you may not stream more than 10 minutes of an hour. You may not put clips of more than 10 minutes of an hour.
Did you read Variety last week? HBO is going to offer.
This is the big one. Yeah, I talked about this. Yeah, so there are a couple of networks that are powerful enough that they can actually say no to the cable companies. HBO's just announced HBO Now. That'll be $15 a month. ESPN, which is the single most expensive channel for cable companies to carry, it's $16 per subscriber per month, is also doing that. For $20, you can get Sling TV and get ESPN, Disney Channel, a few other Disney and ABC channels. Those are all Disney, ABC. And CNN, which is Time Warner. But not many of the National Geographic can't say to Time Warner, oh, the heck with you. They can't because they wouldn't have any carriage. Plus, they make money from Time Warner. So they would be giving up a lot of their revenue. And if it's your cable channel, almost all your revenue, and they would be annoying their one and only way to get to customers. And they can't do that. So the day of IPTV is not here yet. It's coming. HBO going over to the dark side is a huge deal, but it's not over yet by any means. And so cord cutters have limitations in what they can do. The idea is of a cord cutter is, I don't want you, cable company. I want to do everything on the internet. But there's a couple of problems. First of all, without a doubt, your highest speed internet connection to your house right now is your cable company. It's Time Warner. You could go to a telephone company-based solution, DSL, whether from your local company or one of our advertisers, but that's going to be slower. That's going to be slower unless they've put fiber in. And even if you do have fiber, your choice really boils down to the big monopoly cable company or the big monopoly phone company. Neither one of them cares much about you. So we are in a situation where there isn't much competition, and that's one of the reasons we need net neutrality regulation is because there's nothing to force these companies to do the right thing. You can't switch. So I hate to tell you, but if what you need is to watch those channels, you need Time Warner. You don't have a choice. If what you need is the highest possible speed internet, in most cases, I don't know about your neighborhood, but most cases, you need Time Warner because that's your high-speed internet. And the cable companies, they're not stupid. They have slowly, maybe you didn't notice, like a frog in a pot of water that is slowly being brought to a boil, raised the cost of your internet to the point where when you switch over to internet-only programming, it's going to cost you, oh, what a surprise, exactly the same. They're not going to lose any money. And in fact, it might cost you more because now you're buying a la carte all of these individual stations. $15 for HBO is probably, HBO picked that number carefully. It's somewhere between $13 and $18 per subscriber nationwide to buy HBO from your cable company. No surprise that they made it $15, same price. But you know, the only advantage to cord cutting in the long run is you'll be able to go more a la carte. You'll be able to say, well, I only want to get this. In fact, you can go very a la carte. Me may not want all of HBO. You merely may want just one show. At some point, wouldn't it be great if you could just say, well, I want the Game of Thrones stream. And that'll only be $12, you know. In the long run, you're gonna be faced with this. Now, you are in a metro. You're in Los Angeles, which means, and I recommend this, you put an antenna up. Now, you can get anything over the air you want. That's all the television networks. And you can get a TiVo, which I love. This is what I use, a TiVo Romeo. And you can record, you can DVR over the air broadcasts. TiVo will even work with Time Warner. I know this doesn't solve any problem for you, but at least you don't have to use their DVR. The TiVo is a better DVR. You get a cable card from Time Warner. You put it in the back of the TiVo. Now your TiVo is your set-top box. It's the DVR, and you can get hundreds of hours. A TiVo, the highest-end TiVo, which is what I use, it's recording all the time. Hundreds, maybe thousands of hours of high-def recording. But ultimately, I think it's a challenge for you. You're in the TV business. You need to see the National Geographic Channel. You're going to have to do a deal with the devil because there's no other way to do it. You can get over the air, but that's not National Geographic. A lot of the cable channels, there's no other way to get them. You can't get them on the internet. You can't get them over the air. You have to get them through cable. But you can do better, at least, than the cable box that Time Warner is giving you. You can at least use a TiVo. We're Comcast, soon to be Comcast Time Warner, I think, and we use the Comcast X1 solution. That's an interesting solution because it does have a hard drive. One of the cable boxes in the living room has a hard drive. All the other cable boxes don't, but they can see what's on the hard drive in the living room. But I noticed Comcast is slowly starting to DVR stuff on the network on their servers, and I think they'll eventually phase out the hard drive, and then it'll all be... everything you want is you'll have to get it through Comcast. That's where they're headed. You have my deepest sympathy. It is extremely frustrating. And we are still in a transitional period where much of what you want to do just can't be done. 8888 Ask Leo the number. We'll talk more. Another hour to come. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Don't forget the website, techguylabs.com. A great place for your comments. And our chat room's there too. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, smartphones, home theater, digital photography, all that jazz. Apple watches, sure. 8888 Ask Leo. Apple announced its watch April 10th. You can go to the store. You could try one on, the nice steel with Milanese loop. Ooh, pretty. You can, are they going to let you try on the $17,000 watch? I don't think so. Reminds me of going with my future wife. We were looking at rings to a fancy jewelry store. And, of course, Lisa has an eye for diamonds. And she said, what about that one? Can I try that on? And they said, yes, but first, go into this room. We're going to lock the door behind you. The guard gets on duty out front. It was I didn't know this. I don't think Lisa did. I hope she didn't. It was a $250,000 diamond ring. And she did try it on. But obviously we didn't buy it. But that's probably what it'll be like at the Apple Store. Sure, you want to try on the... First, we need to do a credit report. Then you can try it on. Maybe then. I just have to warn you, sometimes extremely rich people look like they're not so rich. In fact, didn't Oprah have a problem in Switzerland? She went into a store... And now Oprah is one of the richest women in the world. She went into a store in Switzerland and was starting to look at some expensive handbags. And the saleswoman said, oh, no, no, no. Why don't you look over here at these bags? Oh, Oprah was incensed. No. So I'm just warning all you Apple employees, you know, some of the richest people you know look like they're homeless. They come in, they're not wearing socks, their shoes don't match, they forgot to shave. That's because they're billionaires, they don't have to shave. You'd have to be a little crazy to buy a $17,000 watch, especially since the $350 watch has the same exact thing inside. It's the same watch. Does the same exact, there's no difference. Okay, they should have done something like,
well, you know, for $17,000, you get 8 gigs of RAM or something. Oh, yes, no, you have the A1X processor. That's the creme de la creme. Your watch goes 0 to 60 in 4.3 seconds. How about that? Now how much would you pay? 8888, ask Leo. James in Niles, Michigan. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, James.
Hey, Leo. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Oh, pretty good. Hey, got a quick question for you. My wife is going to China in a couple months, and I was wondering if there's any big technology new technology that they have in China that we don't have in the States that she could pick up for me and bring home with her.
Well, as you know, everything we use in the States is made in China. So, I don't know. It's interesting that you should ask that question. I don't think there's innovative technology coming out of China so much. In fact, oddly enough, the United States still really is the home for a lot of innovation, interestingly enough. It's in software and so forth. We may manufacture it in China, but I think that it used to be you'd say, oh, you want to see what the future is going to look like? Go to Akihabara in Japan, Tokyo, and you'll see the future on sale. And I think it's less the case these days. However, there are some things you might want to look at. For instance, there's a company that makes phones in China, Xiaomi, that you can't get in the U.S. They're amazing phones. They're really good. And so she might want to look at a Huawei, a Xiaomi, a ZTE, all of these Chinese companies decline to sell in the United States. Now, be aware, the United States Congress has recommended that companies not buy phones or any equipment from Huawei and ZTE because both those companies are partially owned by the Chinese military and they're afraid of spying. So I don't think you have to worry. I think actually the Huawei Mi Note I would look at least look at. The other thing that's really great in China is pirated copies. Really good. I have a friend who goes to China every few months. He has a blog about ARM chips. And he brings me back these clones, Chinese clones of, well, I'll show you. It's the radio, isn't it? I can't. My iPhone 6 from China is indistinguishable. So I have it in the drawer down here so the feds won't come and get it. Looks just like an iPhone. Even has a little Apple on it. Actually, the way you buy this is you buy the phone and then you go across the street and they etch iPhone and an Apple logo on the back just so that it looks the same. But you know, it's a dead giveaway. When you launch the App Store on this, you get the Android App Store because it's really an Android phone that's skinned to look exactly like an iPhone 6. That would be fun for your wife to get. This is, by the way, was $110 in China.
Wow.
Yeah. Those would be kind of fun. I don't think there's anything like you're going to go, wow, those Chinese folks are living in the 21st century. Nothing you're going to say that's like, oh, unbelievable. I'm actually happy to say, because there was some fear that at the turn of the century, maybe we would lose our lead as innovators. The United States still is really Oculus Rift, it's really the home of quite a bit of innovation. Israel, the United States, but not so much China, not so much Asia. They make it all, and they make it beautifully. And in fact, I would guess that this iPhone 6 clone is probably made in some of the same factories the actual iPhone 6 is made in. And she's going to have a great time. Where's she going?
She's going to three cities around China. She's working on her doctorate and doctorate in education. And
wonderful.
She's just visiting schools in China.
Wonderful. That's great. She's going to have I love China. I love visiting China. I was a Chinese major in college, and going to see China for the first time in 2009 blew my mind. And it's an amazing country that is really on the move. So she's going to have a great time. Mostly she should eat.
Yeah, I'll tell her that.
Mostly, if you bring anything back, just bring back a stomach full of Peking duck and you'll be happy. Okay?
thank you very
Tell
much.
Tell her to have a great trip. Thanks for calling, James. I really appreciate it. Vlad in Walnut Creek. Hi, Vlad. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Yeah. Hi, Leo.
Hello. Hi. Welcome. I'm fine. How are you?
Good, good. Yeah, I got a question for you about listening stored podcast without commercial interruption. Looking for software or hardware.
You want to listen to shows like my show.
Oh, but not yours. I will keep yours. All others.
No, I'm not taking it badly. But you want to listen to the podcasts. In many cases, do you want to make them or do you want to find them and download them?
Well, yeah, I'm going to find and download, and somehow, if this software exists, to just skip commercial.
Skip the commercials.
Commercials and just listen shows straight without.
Well, for one thing, most podcasts, they either have fewer commercials. For instance, the podcast of my show that we make, we cut all the commercials out.
Right.
There are commercials because it's a different set of advertisers for the podcast than for the broadcast. So we do have ads, but it's usually three or four ads in the whole show. So in most cases, podcasts will not be laden with ads. What you want is a skip button. And what device are you on? Are you on...
It's a Samsung Galaxy S4.
So you want an Android?
I have a software that I have a skip button, but honestly, I'm more interested to a hardware skip button.
Yeah, that I don't. I mean,
listen to a podcast in a car. I don't want to lose.
Oh, I see. You want to be able to on your right. steering wheel or on the front of the car. Right. You don't want to have to reach down and skip through the. Right. That would be dangerous. Don't do that.
Yeah. Yeah,
I'm not sure. That's a very most podcast apps have software skip buttons, but I don't know of any that would tie to your car. You know, when I listen to Audible in my car, I can press the fast forward or back button, and that will jump forward a minute or back a minute. If I'm listening to the Audible app and I have the Audible app in the chapter by chapter playback mode, that works. I don't know what you'd need. Is a phone and a car that would understand each other. Soon, this is with Apple's CarPlay, Android car for cars, this will be possible that the buttons on the hardware will work with the software, but not yet, I don't think. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888-ASK Leo, that's the number. 888-827-5536. Back to the phones we go, and Steve in Studio City, California. Hi, Steve.
Hey, Leo, how are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm great. Listen, I'm the filmmaker. I called a few months ago, and I called about app timing out. And so, on my quest to get publicity for my film and get reviews and things, I email film festivals and critics and podcasts, and they say, hey, let's do an interview, or you got to check out my film because blah, blah, blah. So they're kind of all the same email, just, pictures and things like that. Well, and I used Google. So for months I was using Google, and at times people would get back to me saying, "His email is blank." I kind of, in my joy to do this and my rush and fun, I didn't really address it. So this went on for a couple months, and all of a sudden I addressed it, and I realized that Google was doing this thing called trimming, email trimming. So I was wondering if you could...
What are they doing? I have never heard of this.
Yeah, so they trim messages. So
you mean they cut it short?
Sometimes they cut it short, so then you have to press like a little button that says more.
Oh, I've seen that. Yeah, you get three dots. You get a little ellipsis.
But the worst part is some, and it's unpredictable, people get a completely just a blank email with nothing in it. Yeah. So
the original idea of this was to hide... replies in long email back and forth threads. So, and I do actually agree with you. It's a little annoying, but I'll see the response. And then if I want to see more, there's a little ellipsis, the three dots, and I can press it to expand it.
Yeah, but see, this is just the first email. So I don't even know why they would.
Well, it's because it's automated. That's the problem, isn't it? And so let me see if I can find. I think I found some articles about this, and I see somebody says how to stop Google from doing email trimming. This is specifically in Gmail. You want your customers to see your email signature. Well, you may want to see more. What it's saying is, I see this repeated. apparently.
Yeah.
And so okay. This is an interesting article from Amit Agarwal, who has a JavaScript book hack to do this, but it's not going to help you because it only helps the recipient. It eliminates it for the recipient. So it is possible he's created a bookmarklet that will do this, but your recipients aren't particularly interested in, you know, you're cold calling them in effect. So they're not going to change their behavior because they expect mail from you.
Right.
I don't know. That's a very interesting question. I don't know how do you prevent that? Does feel like Google is censoring you almost.
That's how it feels. And, you know, they're single emails, and I know the recipient's name. So I say, dear, you know, Joe or whoever. I'm not sending 50 BCCs in one.
Yeah, it's not supposed to do it unless it's a, you know, response. It shouldn't do it on the first email you send to anybody.
Right.
Although I am seeing people saying sometimes it does it because the email is long. But I don't see a lot of ways to stop it. It's very interesting. I think for you, making your email shorter might help.
Well, they say under 100K, which is ridiculous because
You're putting images in that are making it bigger, aren't you?
Right.
Yeah. So that might be one solution. Now, what you can do is in the text, send only text, and the text of the email say, you know, due to limitations in Google's and other email systems, I can't show you all the great images from our fabulous movie. If you'd like to see this email in its entirety, click here and make a web page that is the pitch.
Yeah, maybe. It's just so hard to get people.
I know.
You know, and if you have that image, it just automatically you grab them. So
make it, I guess, you know, and since everybody now is using Gmail, I do. A lot of people are. You're going to have to kind of work by the rules, and I think make your emails smaller and just maybe refer to a larger website or whatever. That's an interesting question.
Yeah.
I do not know how to do that. I do not know how to do that.
Yeah, it's interesting because you always say, you know, if your site's on Facebook, you've got to play by their rules, and if you're using Gmail...
Bingo! And you'd think email should be pure, right? Google doesn't own my email. Why are they modifying it?
Exactly.
But this is more and more, I think, what you're going to see. And they're not trying to be mean. In fact, they probably see it as protecting the recipient. We're not going to let you jam the recipient's inbox with anything bigger than 100K.
Right. But today, the size is just not even...
100K isn't much.
Yeah.
Used to be if your website had a 100,000 bytes of data in it, it would take forever to load. But now with broadband and email and you know, the sizes have changed. I don't know. I really don't. And I sympathize because I understand you want to market, you want to promote your film, and if you're an independent filmmaker, sometimes it's the only way to do it is to go out there and send out emails and stuff. Tell me about the movie again.
Yeah, it's called Fear. It's about, you know, how little things.
Oh, I know why. I know. I get that image from you, that scary image of the woman in the water. It's so scary.
It's
so scary. But, you know, it's great because it grabs you.
Yeah, see, that's why I'm saying it's, well, that's, you know, so important just to get that image to the film reviewer, you know.
Yeah.
Some
people are saying, and maybe this is the solution, if you use a company like MailChimp or Constant Contact that's designed around sending out newsletters and image heavy email. Maybe that's a way to signal Google. Oh no, this is. But you know, then you may end up in the promotions folder. Nobody will ever see it. In some ways, I'm sympathetic to Google. Really, I prefer to get all text email. I don't like getting. I don't use HTML in my emails, and I prefer not to get HTML. Partly because that's a risk, and what you don't control. And Steve, I hate to say it, but I promoted this for years. People using email clients, not the web browser, but email clients, often turn off HTML and turn off formatting and turn off images. I do in all my email clients because it makes the email big, and it's a risk. I'll give you an example. A spammer can put a hidden one-pixel image in the email, and the minute you open or view that email, it sends a little ping back to the spammer. That's a real address. Somebody's reading it. Now, that's, to me, an invasion of privacy. So that's one of the reasons many email clients
let you disable HTML and images and email. I don't think that's a bad thing. I think maybe you might want to rethink your marketing strategy. I do think also that for Google to do that kind of willy-nilly, and as you said, some of your emails are blank. Sounds like there's a flaw. It's broken. That shouldn't be happening. At least the first 100 kilobytes should be able to go through. 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More calls still to come. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And Dave's next in Miami Beach. Hi, Dave.
Hey, hi, Leo. You got David and Christine here down on Miami Beach.
Oh, I'm so jealous. Are you having fun?
Hey, Leo.
Hey, Christine. Hey, Dave.
You helped us out last year when Chris's computer overheated, and I ended up getting her a new computer, which she loves very much.
What'd you get?
I just built her an Asus home and Asus motherboard, and just from the ground up.
I've always had a soft spot for Asus. I really like their stuff.
It was, and we owe you a very big vote of confidence, thankfully, because I was stuck doing just point-and-shoot kind of photography, and I listened to you, long-time listener, by the way.
Thank you.
And I got Christine hooked on you, too. Sorry, honey. She listens to you all.
We've always had an open studio. We have visitors come by. We have a couple of visitors from Italy today. But we have always had, I don't understand it, but honeymooners frequently come by. And I think, what is wrong with you? Don't you have better things to do?
Well, you can only pay attention so long.
I agree at some point. And it's good. I got to say, it's good for your spouse. And I'm not going to be sexist here. It could be a man or woman. But it's good for your spouse to know that you're a geek and embrace that.
Yeah.
So Christine has embraced your inner geek, and I'm glad she tolerates that, Dave.
She does. Yes. I love her for it.
That's a marriage that's going to last. That's good.
So we went on our honeymoon. We were just recently married, and I went out and I bought a Canon D5 Mark II because you had so highly recommended.
Boy, that's a nice camera. You spent some do-re-mi on that.
We went to Italy, and I wanted Perfect. To take some really good pictures.
Did you get some?
1,600 shots I took in Italy.
That's nice.
And I heard you say you're going to go there again. You must go to Amalfi, Leo.
Really? Amalfi, huh? That's the place.
You must go to Amalfi. There is no nicer place in Italy than Amalfi. Oh, my God.
I'm going to get a little top-down two-seater. Drive down the Amalfi coast, beautiful Mediterranean, shimmering blue in the distance.
Yeah, well, I would watch out on those mountain roads, personally.
Well, you know, it's funny. We have a couple from, actually, brother and sister from Rome in studio today, and they're driving down Highway 1, and I said, go on, Big Sur. It's just like the Amalfi coast, only cold. You'll love it. Anyway, what can I do? So are you enjoying your camera?
Oh, I love my camera, except now.
It's too big and heavy, isn't it?
Yes, sir, it is. And I fell in love. Down here in Florida, we have an incredible mall that has an Apple store, a Sony store,
nice.
And a Windows store.
Oh, boy.
And I went into the Sony store, and I put my hands on a little number called an A7II.
Oh, Lord, that's a nice camera. And I'm going to be a bad influence on you here, Dave, I got to tell you.
So, Leo, you've always been my guiding light when it comes to digital photography. Here's my question. My neighbor wants to give me $1,800 for my D5 II.
Just the body, I hope.
No, body and lens.
Okay, don't do it because those cameras are highly prized. That's the current model. If you have some decent lenses, did you just the kit lens, the 24-105, or did you get something else?
No, it's a 24-105, but it's not a Mark III. It's a Mark II.
Oh, it's a Mark II. Yeah. I would before you sell it to your neighbor for $1,800. It cost for you about twice that, didn't it? New.
Yeah, close to $3,000.
Okay. Look on eBay and see what people are getting for a comparable system see if that's a fair price. It sounds low to me, but maybe not. Used cameras hold their value. Good lenses, good bodies, they hold their value quite well. Nevertheless, $1,800 would get you a body anyway for the Sony Alpha 7 Mark II.
Well, from what I've seen, Leo, there's a kit lens that comes with it, and the whole deal's $1,900.
Nice deal.
You think that's a good deal?
Yes, that's the right deal. Which lens is the kit lens?
It's goes up to 70 millimeter. It's I think it's
okay.
A 28
it's their zoom.
70.
Yeah. So yeah. I am a big fan of this new Sony Alpha series. In fact, it's the only camera I carry now.
I love it.
They've done a really nice job because it's a full frame sensor. So in a body that's half as heavy and half the size of your 5D, you're getting a sensor that is not only as good, it's better than. This is the sensor that, for instance, Nikon uses in their D800. It's a really good sensor. It's probably the best sensor in that format out there. And then you have an additional feature, which I like, which is this camera, because it's mirrorless and so compact, can take adapters. The negative on it is that Sony's only put out a handful of lenses for it, though they're good. They're very good. The kit lens would be fine, but eventually you want to get other lenses because it's an interchangeable lens camera. But the adapters means you can run a lens from any system almost. And this camera does a very good job with even very fancy lenses like the Leica lenses. So many, I know several of my friends who are pros are you know, have moved from the Nikon D1 or the Canon 5D to these Sony Alpha 7s. I think they're very, very good cameras. I think that's a great deal, and I think you'll enjoy it. And it is lighter, and you're so. I carry mine much more than I would my 5D. It's just too heavy.
Did you stop carrying your 5D? Are you actually using the A7 now, Leo?
All the time. It's all I use.
Do.
Yeah.
You know, for the most part, the camera I have with me is my iPhone, which is in my pocket.
Well, it's not a bad. That's a great camera. But there's things you can't do. You can't zoom.
No.
Low light photography is not great.
Yeah.
I actually shoot with the A7S, which is an older version of the A7. I do have an A7 too. Lisa uses that. But the A7S is very good. It's only 12 megapixels, which is really good in low light, which means I can get amazing low light photography.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
So but the A7 II has image stabilization that is second to none. They licensed it from Olympus and those OMD cameras I was talking earlier. I do think I think there's no better camera system out there right now.
Oh, well, thank you. And the other quickie question I have, is it okay if I ask one more quickie question?
Yeah, there's a chat room saying get a bid from B&H Photo before you sell it to your neighbor.
I looked at B&H. 2265 was what they asked for it.
Not what they're asking. B&H. They have a used camera department. They'll give you a quote. Not for your old camera, not the new one.
Because I thought 18 might be a little low, you know?
Yeah, I think it's a little low.
Might be. Christine just got the 6 Plus phone.
The big phone.
It. Yeah.
She loves it.
That's a great camera in there.
Yeah,
it is. But we're noticing the battery life is not all that great in the phone. And I thought that it might be a little better. Any thoughts on some of those battery packs?
Yeah, Mophie. Get a Mophie.
Mophie?
Yeah, they're the best.
Okay.
All right. Leo, thank you so much.
Thanks, Leo.
Thanks, Christine. Thanks for putting up with Dave. Always good to be nice to the geek in your life. Thank you, Dave and Christine. Enjoy Miami. Here they are. They're out in the beautiful sunshine. They're walking down the coast, and they're calling on me. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. We put our all the notes, everything we talk about, links and so forth, and I'll put links to these cameras as well in our show notes, techguylabs.com. You start talking cameras, as you can tell, and I apologize because I'm kind of a buff. You can go on and on and on. And the truth is, let's be really honest, great photographers can use anything, including an iPhone. The camera does not make you a great photographer. Trust me, I know. I've spent a lot of money on cameras, and I'm still a terrible photographer. So a lot of us geeks kind of get into the gear. But don't be fooled by that. The camera you've got is all you need, even if it's a smartphone, because really the skill is composition, finding the right moment, thinking about light, and that's what Chris Marquardt always talks about on the show, and I have to agree with him. It ain't the camera, it's the photographer. Be silly to ask, Shakespeare. Well, is that quill pen? Is that what's making it? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888. Ask Leo, the last segment of the weekend. I'm sad. We've had fun today. Let's see if I can get a few more calls in before I have to deflate myself and stick myself back in the box. Ben from Sanford, North Carolina. Hi, Ben.
Hey, Leo. Nice to talk to you again.
Thanks for calling.
Yeah. So I've been assigned a task, a research email that had just been sent to my family. And so I just decided to start with you.
Okay.
All right. So the email says that we're getting a notice of copyright infringement because someone downloaded a song from the internet.
Okay. So who's the email ostensibly? By the way, this would be a great thing to punk people with. Who's the email say it's from?
It says it's from charter.net.
Okay.
And that's our...
So it's your ISP. So it's probably legit. The way this works these days is the ISPs do not voluntarily hand over information about their customers to the music industry. The music industry, however, has convinced internet service providers, including Charter, to go along with something they call the six strikes rule. And the way it works, if the music company hears of infringement, and by the way, they're always out there looking for it. Now, I'm going to explain this to you, and then pretend I'm your attorney. You do not need to state whether you're guilty or innocent of this. I'm sure you're innocent of it. Doesn't matter. Because what happens is that they're always looking at BitTorrent sites. By the way, when you use BitTorrent, your IP address is visible unless you take action to prevent that. So you're not doing it in private. When you download from music sharing sites, that often is the case. It's possible for them to figure out you're only... one thing about you, your internet address. Maybe you have Wi-Fi and somebody sat on the curb and downloaded a song. Whatever. For some reason, and this is part of the problem I have with this process because they don't reveal how, the music industry has decided that you're an offender. You violated their copyright. They now look at the internet address. The only thing they know from the internet address is your internet service provider. They know it's Charter. Because each internet service provider has a range of addresses it uses. So they look at the address and go, oh... And they send a mail to Charter. They probably send hundreds of pieces of mail every day to Charter. Now, Charter, as an agreeer, a signatory to this six strikes rule, has agreed that they will go through a series of steps. Is this your first time?
Yes.
So you're strike one, which is really pretty mild. They probably say something like, knock it off.
Yeah, pretty much. It says your ISP has forwarded you this notice. Your ISP account has been used to download, upload, or off. For upload copyright content in a manner that infringes on the rights of the copyright owner.
Right.
Your ISP service could be suspended if this...
It won't be suspended. Yeah. So here's the thing. Just if you are doing this, if, for instance, if somebody in your house is running a BitTorrent client, turn it off.
Right.
if you have... It's easy. You download MicroTorrent. You say, oh, good, I just got the latest Game of Thrones. I'm buying it. I have a HBO subscription, but I don't want to wait, so I downloaded it. And what happens with most BitTorrent downloaders is they're also uploaders. It will continue to upload. HBO is constantly looking, scanning the internet for this. They see your address. They go to your Charter guys, and they say, send them a note. Strike one. Now, if you look Google six strikes, you'll see what all the steps are. Even the sixth strike doesn't guarantee being knocked off the internet, but it could.
Right.
So but you will get a second and a third and a fourth. You'll get six notices before you really get, penalized for this. But each one goes up and up and up. This is in lieu of suing. They used to sue you guys. I am so sorry. They used to sue those guys. They've sued 12-year-olds, the music industry. And it got to be such a black mark promotionally wise. The PR was so bad, they stopped doing that. This is the new thing. So you can Google six strikes. You'll see what the process is. You're in the process now.
Okay. I was just wondering if you've ever heard of the company that actually reported it. Their name is Rights Corp.
That's right.
DigitalRightsCorp.com.
Yep. There are several of these. They work. They're basically tools of the music industry.
Oh, okay.
And so a record label or HBO or anybody who's creating content that is pirated on the internet will go to these guys. They will find this is how it works. Now, they didn't ask for money, did they?
They asked for $20 per infringement.
No, don't send them anything. So that may be a hoax because that is not how it's supposed to work.
That's why I called you.
That may be a hoax. That would be a very effective hoax, wouldn't it? A lot of people would send $20. Go, oh gosh, I'll send you $20. Bucks. Don't ever send them money.
Okay.
That is not in the deal. Go Google six strikes. You'll see. At no point is money to exchange hands. If this were legitimate, the main point would be knock it off.
Right.
And so,
look, I've never received one of those. I've used BitTorrent for years, a variety of different tools that could conceivably get me in trouble. I used to use Napster all the time to download music. I have since learned my lesson, and I don't do that anymore. I buy music. You don't have to buy music anymore. You get a Spotify account. You know, $10 a month, you're golden. So it's not a big deal anymore. But yeah, I would guess that's a scam if they're asking for money.
Yeah. It freaked my family out. So.
Well, and then the thing to do is, just in case, you might look and see, make sure. You know what? You tell the teenagers in the family, kids, it's not okay. What I did with my kids, they used to use a thing called LimeWire, which has been sued out of business. I said, kids, yep. Stop it. First of all, it's a great way to get viruses, malware, and adware on your computer. So it's a bad idea anyway. And you're ripping off the artists you love the most. I gave them an allowance. I said, here's $10 a month on iTunes. Buy the CD you want. Every month you can buy another one. Now you just pay for Spotify, and that's all you need. You get a, you know. So I think that this is probably a scam, only because they asked for money. Yeah. You can stop your research now.
All right, and one last thing.
Yeah.
When I googled the address for that they have on here, it's 3100 Donald Douglas Loop in Santa Monica, California.
Yeah.
It looks like it was an airport.
You know, they might have a little office there. One of the chatters says Rights Corp is a snitch. What they haven't, you right now, you no one knows what you're doing. And if you're doing it, and then they say, give us $20, we won't tell anybody. Boy, that makes me mad. Don't give them a penny.
All right.
And don't steal music or TV shows.
I don't know who did it. But.
Yeah, and maybe somebody did, especially if you have kids in the house. They're not stupid.
No.
It's easy. It's easy. But don't do that.
Right.
Now you have, put this up on the wall and say, hey, kids, you see, we could be in trouble here. Don't do this. You don't want to lose your internet.
Hey, I don't want to lose my internet.
I don't want to either. Right. No, if you Google Six Strikes, you'll see what the real process is. Rights Corp, I'm being told, and I don't know this for a fact, but the chat room says, oh, no, this is known. They go around, they find this stuff, and then they say, well, we won't tell on you if you would just send us a $20 bill. And that's such a low number. It's not the kind of number the music industry would want, I can tell you that.
Right.
We're talking thousands of dollars per infringement. When they used to sue, thousands of dollars for every infringement, not $20. So it's not real. And I don't know why anybody would pirate anymore, to be honest with you. You know, it was always, to me, I mean, I guess there's criminals out there, but most people who were using these services weren't criminals. But there was no easy way to do it. And now it's so easy and relatively inexpensive to get a Spotify account or to buy music online, but buy one song for 99 cents. You really like that song, buy it. Make some money for the person who put their heart and soul into that. TV show, same thing. You can even get, you know, Game of Thrones on Netflix or Hulu or iTunes or whatever. It's so easy now. Part of the reason this occurred is because there was no other way to do it. Now that there is a legitimate way to do it, please be a good person and pay the person for the hard work they put into it. Otherwise, we won't get the next Game of Thrones. We won't get the next, Blurred Lines, whatever it is. You got to buy the song. You got to buy the show. Hey, thanks for joining me. I really appreciate it. I hope you enjoyed yourself today and have a great Geek Week. Thanks to Nathan Staten, our musical director, for putting on the tunes. In every case, a licensed performance through ASCAP BMI. We also thank Heather Hammond for answering the phones, which she performs completely illegally. Thank you for being here. We'll see you next time. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on MacBreak Weekly, iPad on iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.